the truth is actually words do inspire. Words do help people get involved. Words do help members.
In terms of the work that Canada has been doing in assisting Syria, do you feel that anything else, anything additional should be done in order to help with the crisis that is currently ongoing?
Well, I definitely believe that, you know, war and violence is never the answer to ending violence. I'm a firm believer in that notion. I really think Canada has the capacity to push for peaceful negotiations, to bring all parties involved in the conflict to the negotiating table and just help establish peace once and for all. Once that's established, once they are able to bring the parties together and help work something out, I think Canada can really work with the United Nations in terms of bringing justice to the country. So going back to what I said earlier about involving women in justice processes, the United Nations Security Council released a resolution. It's called Resolution 1325 in 2000. And it's basically a resolution about integrating women in the peace processes. And I think Canada, given its peacemaking and peacekeeping history, should really involve itself in that resolution and implementing it and helping the United Nations implement that resolution in Syria. It has been implemented in countries such as Sudan, but in Syria we've yet to see it. And I think that's one initiative that Canada can actually focus on.
As a previous intern for various organizations and government agencies, do you think that the government in Canada would have the ability and the influence to assist in further mitigating the situation in Syria?
Oh, for sure. For sure. But I, like I said earlier, I don't think that war is ever the answer.
Absolutely.
You know, war just leads to more war. Violence leads to more violence. I don't ever think that violence leads to peace.
No, I agree with you. I feel that, you know, obviously in this situation, it's a very difficult...
It's a complex situation without a doubt, especially, you know, with the rise of extremist groups such as ISIS in the region, you know, that kind of... It's not easy finding a solution to such a complex problem. However, I think Canada should really focus its efforts on promoting and encouraging all peaceful efforts to end the conflict in Syria. You know, once you exhaust all peaceful efforts, then maybe you can look at alternatives such as military power, whatnot. But I think military power and the use of military power should be a kind of a last resort.
Definitely. Yeah. I'd like to move on by asking you a question pertaining more about your personal experience.
Sure.
As the chair of the Peace, Conflict, and Justice Studies annual conference at the Monk School of Global Affairs, what have you learned as a result of this position? Also, in terms of the conference, please discuss any upcoming events.
So the conference is actually still in the planning process. The conference is actually happening in February of 2016. I, along with actually two other chairs, have devised a proposal, which was basically voted on by the student body, to bring forward a conference about humanitarianism and the role of NGOs in humanitarianism in the 21st century and the role of government and basically how humanitarianism and the concept of humanitarianism has changed when looked from the lens of the 21st century and the experiences of the 21st century. So we are hoping on. So it's big. It's just one big conference that happens in February, and we are hoping to bring in academics and practitioners. And hopefully maintaining that balance between academics and practitioners, because academics tend to look at it in a very theoretical perspective, whereas practitioners, for instance, we are looking at bringing someone from Doctors Without Borders and the Red Cross. They see how humanitarianism, when it's put to practice on the ground, they see how it works out as opposed to scholars and academics who have a more theoretical intake on it. So we're hoping to shed some light on that topic, and it's quite prominent, especially with there's actually a global conference happening on humanitarianism in the United Nations in 2016, so it's definitely a perfect time to discuss something like this.
It sounds like the combination between taking a theoretical approach and a practical approach definitely benefit a lot of students, a lot of individuals interested in attending the conference.
For sure, and exposes students to different pathways that they can take with this sort of educational background. You can choose to pursue an academic career, or you can actually go into the field and see how it works out. So it's very eye-opening, I would say.
As the communications director of the Peace, Conflict, and Justice Studies Society, what would you say are three major issues of concern pertaining to international relations and affairs right now?
In terms of communication?
In terms of communication.
Well, I mean, I think in terms of communications and international relations, I think people often only get one side to the story. Whenever it comes to an international issue, let's look at Syria, for instance. Let's go back to Syria. The mainstream media, Western media on a whole, has just one narrative explaining the situation in Syria. However, for me, I'm also fluent in Arabic. I sometimes look at Arabic news sources, and they often have a contrasting point of view. Doesn't mean it's right. But it's a narrative that isn't generally heard in Western media. So I think that's where the communication, one big communication issue is, that people aren't really exposed to the different narratives so that they can bring those narratives together and then form their own judgment and opinion.
I think that's definitely crucial, is being educated and understanding what's going on in different countries.
Yeah.
And in order to understand, you sometimes have to interpret information and have a document or an article that's translated. That exposure itself definitely would help someone shape their perspective, their view. So I can see merit to understanding and interpreting
other
viewpoints.
It's obviously not easy, though, because other viewpoints are oftentimes not in English, especially in these war-torn countries. For instance, with Syria, a lot of these opposing viewpoints are in Arabic. So obviously, if you don't know Arabic, it's not easy for you to be exposed to those sort of narratives and different viewpoints.
You were previously a co-director of the University College Student Refugee Program, where you were responsible for the development of a budget that allocates the finances of the World University Services of Canada Committee. You also ensured that the sponsored students would have sufficient financial assistance throughout the year. In addition, you prepared for the arrival of a South Sudanese refugee in Kenya by ensuring that all residents' meal plan, immigration, and academic matters were in order. Please discuss your experience helping with the management of the initial arrival and orientation of the World University Service of Canada student. In addition, please discuss the University College Student Refugee Program.
Okay, so I was part of the University College Local Committee for the World University Service of Canada. So essentially what the World University Service of Canada does is that it works with partners with universities across Canada to help sponsor refugees to come and study at the university. The experience in and of itself was a lot of work, but it was also very self-fulfilling. I think you feel really good being part of it, just because you feel like you're making a difference in someone's life. Especially at the very beginning, so pre-arrival for this, so the student arrived in September, but we were preparing for his arrival months in advance. So dealing with all these immigration issues, making sure that his tuition was waived and his meal plan was waived and that everything was in order before he arrived. Obviously, that was quite a bit of work, but I enjoyed every bit of it. It was also quite hard when the student arrived to Canada, because coming from Africa, it's a completely different environment. The student doesn't have any family in Canada. The whole system is obviously different. So it was hard getting them used to, you know, getting them to transition from their life in Africa to their life in Canada. But they eventually did, and I thought the process was very rewarding. And right now they're in their second year of university and they're hoping to go to medical school. So just to feel like you left an impact in someone's life like that, it's very it's very nice.
I think that's extremely inspirational, and I feel that you're definitely someone who's committed to helping students.
You
definitely strike me as a person who cares about the well-being of people, as well as your ability to communicate effectively through various ways of work is impressive.
Thank you.
You also were previously a director of external affairs at the University of Toronto Refugee Alliance. You raised awareness about issues that were faced by refugees all across the world. You also organized charity fundraisers in the Toronto community, panel discussions, clothes drives, and more to assist refugees abroad. You've done a lot of work for refugees, for a lot of people in the community. As a result of your experience, what more do you feel can be done in order to perhaps assist refugees abroad? Which you've already answered that question prior. However, what more do you think families, students, people who might not necessarily have the resources to assist in this crisis, what other avenues and ways can someone make a difference, even a small difference?
Yeah, I mean, definitely, like, the smallest things sometimes can make the biggest difference. So there is actually a campaign going on at the University of Toronto. It's basically initiated by the University of Toronto Students Union. It's basically, the hashtag is Canada, Your Time Is Now. And what this campaign is calling for is for Canada, the Canadian government, to basically take more of a stand in terms of bringing more refugees to Canada and helping them and providing them and supporting them. So something as simple as a hashtag, I think, can leave a huge impact. Something as simple as signing a petition for the government to become encouraged to help refugees can leave a huge impact. So these are, you know, and social media, everyone has social media nowadays. It doesn't cost you a dime.
Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram.
Exactly.
The point is to get the message across.
Exactly.
And for today's youth to be involved.
Yeah, and that's one of the simplest and I think one of the most effective ways to make a difference in your community. If you want to make an even bigger difference, I would recommend touching base with some local NGOs who are working towards helping refugees. So currently I'm trying to work with an organization called Lifeline Syria. It's an organization that works with the United Nations and the Canadian government to bring Syrian refugees to Canada. So I'm hoping to be to work as an interpreter, because a lot of these refugees obviously are not going to know English, and it would help if there's someone there to bridge the gap between, you know, the spoken Arabic that they have and, you know, obviously the English society that we have here in Canada. So there are numerous ways that you can volunteer, and one of the simplest and easiest and least time-consuming ways, I would say, is just getting yourself out there on social media.
Previously, you were a director of mentorship at the University of Toronto Association of Political Science Students. You organized a program where first and second year political science students were mentored by senior students in the political science department. How has the mentorship program contributed to the success of first and second year students?
Well, I mean, the goal of the program is essentially to expose first and second year students not only to on-campus and off-campus political science opportunities, but also kind of to give them some guidance in terms of the academic world. So a lot of these upper years are applying to grad school. A lot of them are either going into law school or they want to pursue graduate school and studies in international affairs. So the goal of the program all in all is to give these lower years some insight that they wouldn't receive otherwise. So, and like I mentioned earlier, connections are key, and forming a connection with an upper year student who has been through everything that you are currently going through, and for them to shed some light on what lays ahead, and for them to give you some advice about what you could do in the pathway that you might want to take, is, I think, crucial for helping these students develop their educational and career pathway.
You also worked as a R2P live research analyst at the Canadian Centre for Responsibility to Protect, where you collected and identified all English and Arabic articles. on the internet related to the responsibility to protect principle. We talked about this earlier, but overall, what I'd like you to do is to describe the significance of this position and the organization itself to our listeners.
Okay, so the Canadian Centre for Responsibility to Protect is actually based at the University of Toronto. It's based on, it basically runs on the ideal of R2P, which is Responsibility to Protect. And this is a concept that's relatively new. It's basically a concept that calls for governments such as Canada or in the United States, for instance, to intervene in countries whereby the government has basically lost control over its population. It's harming its population. So, for instance, some may argue that the Syrian government is committing a serious degree of human rights abuses against its own population. So that may be an excuse to implement this notion called the Responsibility to Protect that calls on foreign governments to intervene militarily to bring a halt to human rights abuses. So that's essentially what the CCR2P seeks to promote, and they try to promote the idea of the concept of R2P becoming not just a concept, but they want it to become a norm in international affairs. Right now, some people believe it's just a principle, some people believe it's a concept. They want to bring it forward as a norm in international affairs. My role as an R2P Live analyst, like you said earlier, I collected English and Arabic articles on R2P, and what was striking about that was how contrasting the views are depending on which language you read the articles in. So obviously, English articles, predominantly originating from the West, obviously they're in many ways and a lot of the times were in favor of implementing R2P. However, if you were to read an article based from Yemen, for instance, from Syria, from Lebanon, on the whole, they were very anti-R2P just because they're the ones who are going to be subject to military intervention. You know, they're the ones who are going to have to suffer the consequences of a foreign government intervening in their country. So I would definitely say it was interesting seeing that contrasting view.
Another question I want to ask you is, most Canadian provinces have mandated that a course in civics, geography, history, politics be mandatory for grade 9 to 10 students. Yet while a course in Canadian and world issues is offered to senior high school students, it's strictly optional. Students at that level usually start giving more thought to what they'll study at university or even to what career paths they'll consider. Is it a problem that grade 11 to 12 students aren't provided with an international perspective as to the critical juncture in their professional development? What's your opinion on that?
Well, I would say that with the rise of social media, you know, something as simple as sharing an article on Facebook really exposes you to stuff that's happening around the world. So while I don't think that it's completely mandatory and necessary to force them to take, for instance, an international politics class, I would create some sort of mechanism to encourage them to learn more about these topics, because you don't have to be studying politics or be intending on pursuing a career in politics and international affairs to become at least knowledgeable about what's happening. Because I feel like there's nothing worse than actually being ignorant about an issue. You know, living in your own safe bubble here in Canada or the United States or wherever, and all the while not realizing that halfway across the world, you know, there's people who can't go to school without fearing that they're going to be bombed or raped. So I feel like we should perhaps not force students to take an international politics course, but provide the means for them to get exposed to human rights issues and international issues that affect people across the globe.
I definitely agree with you. I do feel that being educated about issues that are happening in this world, it is a social responsibility.
Oh, yeah.
You don't necessarily have to be registered or enrolled in a program to be informed.
Yeah, it's definitely important to be informed. Yeah. And but oftentimes people, when they find out I'm Syrian, they ask me, they start off their questions with, "I don't mean to offend you." But actually, they never offend me because I'm actually very happy.
You should be proud to, you know, have the background that you have and to answer questions.
Yeah, so I would definitely encourage, regarding any sort of humanitarian issue or international issue, like, just ask the questions. No one's going to get offended. Obviously, be respectful.
Exactly.
In the way that you ask your question, but... it's definitely important to ask some questions to remain informed and to remain educated.
Absolutely. Bushra, what have you learned as a result of your involvement with the Association of Political Science Students and with your affiliation through the work that you've done with various government agencies and various organizations?
Well, through my work in the APSS, I've really expanded my leadership capabilities. You know, leading a course union with almost 3,000 students, it's not an easy task. It teaches you time management skills, communication skills, leadership skills. But at the same time, I think it kind of teaches you to be humble. You know, don't think of yourself too much. You know, at the end of the day, you're just a student just like everyone else. And it teaches you that with a bit of effort, you could really be making a big difference in people's lives. So that's the biggest thing that I learned from the APSS and that I'm continuing to learn from the APSS. With respect to what I've done in the Senate and through all these other NGOs, I mean, each and every one of those experiences was a learning experience. Each and every one of them taught me something about what I'm passionate about and what I hope to continue doing in the future. In the Senate, I did a lot of work on Syria. And writing articles on what's happening in Syria and what the Canadian government, international community needs to do for Syria. So it really exposed me and made me realize how passionate I am for peace in Syria. While I did realize that before, obviously because my parents are from there and I'm born there, it just made me realize it even more about how important it is for Syria to have, for instance, its expatriates. Because I'm a dual citizen, I'm a Syrian citizen and a Canadian citizen, how important it is for me, someone educated in the West and raised in the West, to use my knowledge gained in the West and my experiences gained in an amazing country like Canada to better Syria. Because Syria right now obviously doesn't have the capacity to better itself. It really needs help from the outside.
Bushra, I really want to thank you for your time and I appreciate you coming here for this interview. It's been a pleasure getting to know you. Any final words for the listeners?
Just do what you're passionate about and just work hard because you're due to make a difference in at least one person's life and that means something. Just work hard and keep doing what you're doing and just don't just sit around.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Maybe you could be a mayor or a senator or a Supreme Court justice. You ready? But you might not know that until you join student government or the debate team. And no matter what you want to do with your life, I guarantee that you'll need an education to do it. Let's go. What you make of your education will decide nothing less than the future of this country.